All right, good morning, 7:42 here on the Mighty 690 as we go throughout a Friday edition of the program. And joining us on our legislative update, we have State Representative Ron Bryce. Good morning, Ron. How are you doing?
Good morning. It's a beautiful day here.
Absolutely. It is kind of, I think it's nice to have some of these warmer temperatures still, even though I think a lot of people are waiting for the cooler actual fall weather. But hey, we're going to take it either way.
Yeah, it's coming.
So we got lots to get into today. So I know that you said that you had just been checking out some of the progress over at the new Bartlett plant. So you want to talk a little bit about that?
Right. I think it's a little bit under the radar of people that I speak with, but there's a huge construction project going on between here, basically in Cherryville, kind of south of Cherryville. It's the Bartlett soybean crush plant. And when I first heard of it, I thought, I'm not an agriculture person. I'm trying to learn all I can about agriculture. But when I heard about soybean crushing, it didn't impress me. But this thing is impressive. They've just poured these huge storage bins, 14 stories tall, 140 feet. They have a crushing plant. It's probably something in the order of $400 million construction project for Montgomery County, which is huge. The amount of concrete, the amount of infrastructure that they're doing over there is just phenomenal. So yesterday I had the privilege of going with several soybean producers, farmers, and there was a tour, and it was so impressive. They have, if you could imagine, bringing in these soybeans from all over the area, all over the country. They have miles and miles of railroad tracks where the cars will be. They have the capability of, now get this, James, they can unload a whole truck of soybeans, weigh it, unload it, reweigh it, get it finally out of the plant in 6 minutes.
So that is impressive.
They're going to really have a boost to the local economy.
Well, that is great. We appreciate that update and looking forward to that when it is completed. I know people are looking forward to some of the jobs in the area. Also wanted to ask you about this Provolis group that is coming around the area. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Right. That's not a definite thing, but it's a possibility. So I'd love to just share what's publicly known. There's a group called Provolis, and it's a very large company that provides IT services. And they are looking at two cities in Montgomery County, Coffeyville and Independence, about setting up a satellite office where they will have IT work. And I think it's really neat that the vision they have for their company is to emphasize hiring military vets. They want to develop downtowns that are in decay, and they want to provide jobs in the U.S. rather than outsourcing them overseas. And so we've been talking with them. They've had a couple of visits. The executives from the company came a week or two ago, and they're looking at developing something in either downtown Coffeyville or downtown Independence. I think there's one or two other cities, but we're still in the running. We're kind of at the top of the heap, so we hope that, at least I hope, that we'll be able to do something because, you know, downtown development is probably such a key for not only just the community but economic development. And I would love to see something like that there, where we have up to 300 people employed in downtown. We have developed upstairs apartments and Airbnbs and so forth, restaurants. And so that's kind of the vision. I wanted to ask you, James, I don't know if this has been a question of the day for KDGF or not, but we've kind of tossed around, what kind of events should Coffeyville do? And I have a running conversation with my wife, and I think she likes some of the more feminine things, and I like some of the more macho things. And I know Coffeyville has had drag racing, and you know, we're a town that is built on brick factories and foundries and industrial blue collar jobs, and I think we need to keep that flavor. But I've been talking with people about bringing in even like boxing and wrestling matches maybe during the downtown events, and maybe reviving the drag racing, maybe doing things that are kind of a macho flavor. And I don't know if that's a question of the day or not, but to me, that's the kind of the personality of Coffeyville that I hope we can restore.
Well, and you look at events, you know, like the demo derby and the crowds that that draws. I mean, that's something you can't deny. The crowd size. I mean, that is the really big draw of the fair.
And you know, the biggest event in Coffeyville history was a shootout with bank robbers. You know, that's just about as blue collar as you can get. This reminds me of something I saw on Netflix fairly recently, and it's this. I think it's called "We Are the Champions." And it's these little towns all over the world that have an event, an annual event, where it's a destination, kind of a quirky thing. And there's a cheese roll event. There's a hot pepper eating contest event, different things. I think Coffeyville can be a destination if we kind of incorporate our history into something like that.
Sure, sure. No, it's a great point. I know there's plenty of towns around that do stuff like that, even turtle races, you know. So, and speaking of animals, we have had some discussion here this past week on the mid-national news regarding this prairie chicken debacle that continues.
Well, it's also an interesting thing. During the legislative session this year, the lesser prairie chicken was on the front of everyone's mind. But I kind of looked up, what is a prairie chicken? Have you ever seen a prairie chicken?
Yeah, I have.
Mm-hmm. The lesser prairie chicken. Okay, I looked it up because I wasn't sure I'd seen one, but a medium-sized grouse, 15 inches long, 22 ounces. They're known for lekking behavior, which is kind of something a lot of animals do, but the males have competitive rituals to attract females. I guess humans also do that sort of thing. But President Biden did veto a resolution that would have let the prairie chicken, well, let me put it this way, the lesser prairie chicken is not endangered currently, but it's projected to possibly be endangered in the future. And so there was a resolution by the Kansas delegation in Washington, including our representatives and senators, that would allow farmers to continue using their land and not be hindered by the endangered or potential endangered status of the lesser prairie chicken. So the Kansas Sierra Club, of course, applauded President Biden on vetoing that. But it's the thing about the lesser prairie chicken is when there's drought conditions, the numbers dwindle. And then when there's more rain, the numbers go up. And that's been a cycle for as long as we've known about the lesser prairie chicken. And so my feeling is it's probably, we want to protect our species and so forth, but it's not endangered right now. And I think hindering farmers from using their fields is just shooting ourselves in the foot. So I would really applaud the Kansas delegation in Washington for sponsoring the legislation. And I hope we can maintain our agricultural viability if this thing goes through.
Well, and if I remember right, the prairie chickens typically use the same leks year after year. So the producers and farmers usually know where those are. And a lot of them are outdoor, you know, recreation enthusiasts and want to make sure that that is preserved.
Yeah.
I mean, farmers are the original conservationists. So, yeah. You know, they're all about, you know, saving the land. And even these oil and gas producers know that it is in everyone's best interest to make sure the land is, you know, taken care of, and you know, even after a drilling operation is complete. And I mean, we all know here in Southeast Kansas and Northeast Oklahoma that, you know, oil drilling is not going to necessarily be very disruptive to the environment, although some people like to say that it is.
Yeah, and we need to have level heads and have a more comprehensive view of this. And I think, like you said, people who are working with the land, for instance, and hunters, people who are involved with wildlife, they have the best interest in mind of preserving these things.
So moving on a little bit, I know that Virgil Peck has been in Topeka. I know there's been the different sessions and that sort of thing. Any discussion here on the legislator compensation? Has there been some talk on that?
Right. I was in Topeka a week or two ago. I guess it was 2 weeks ago. And this is the time of year where we're not in session, but there are interim committees called. And so there are 12, 15 interim committees. And one of these committees is to look at legislator compensation. And I have mixed feelings about that, honestly, because, you know, it kind of seems almost self-serving if I were to vote to raise my own salary. And I you know, I enjoy making money, but that doesn't have a good look to it, and so I'm hesitant. But on the other hand, I've almost been convinced to go ahead and go along with that, because when you go to the state legislature and you see the composition of the House and the Senate, it's, you know, vast majority, I don't know, 80-90% of the people in there are old, gray-haired white guys like me who are retired. And I think that has an influence on how we approach legislation. I would love to see something done, maybe compensation is the way, but to bring younger people, people raising families, and people that have a little newer, brighter perspective on things. And one, you know, right now, honestly, we're paid some in the legislature, but it's almost every legislator takes a big pay cut by going to Topeka for 3 months out of the year. They can't work, and so they get a minimal compensation. If we could raise that to where, say, someone raising children, has a family, can afford to go to Topeka for 3 or 4 months a year and still provide for their family, that might be a way of bringing in better perspective. And so the commission was set. It's not current legislators on this committee, but there are former legislators and those who were appointed by the governor and others on this commission, and they are looking at the issue. And I would love to have people's perspective on that, because I could see how it could go either way, and I don't want to be self-serving. But at the same time, I think we need the perspective of younger people in the legislature.
Sure. No, that is definitely a good point. And I know, lots of people, it'd be hard for them to take several months out of a job and that sort of thing. So that is a good point there. In addition, anything else kind of that you want to hit here, as we do have about 5 minutes remaining in the program? I know that we have, I actually heard in the news not too long ago regarding fentanyl, now that they're saying that, there's been, everyone's always, worried about it. Of course, the advice is, hey, never touch something that you're not sure of. I actually just saw a headline this last week that you can't now. They're saying you overdose from just touching fentanyl. But it is still something that we're super, concerned about. And there's some obviously real tragic stuff that goes on with that.
Well, it ties in with several issues. The fentanyl, and let me just say, as a medical doctor, we've used fentanyl injectable and patches for some time. It's highly potent opioid. Opioids come from the opium of the poppy, the poppy. And it used to be the Mexican cartels would grow poppies down in Mexico, and they would make this sort of thing and smuggle it over the border. Because of eradication of the poppy fields, now, believe it or not, China is really the driver behind a lot of these things. And I don't know if you realize this, but COVID is not the only thing from export from Wuhan, China. Believe it or not, Wuhan, China, where COVID originated, in some say in the virology lab there. It's also the exporter of the precursors or the ingredients for fentanyl. And so this Wuhan, I'd like to know who's running Wuhan. there's so much bad coming out of Wuhan.
Yeah, there might be some familiar names, unfortunately.
Yeah, but when COVID came out, the price of street drugs skyrocketed because Wuhan was the exporter of the precursors. What they do is they send these ingredients to the cartels in Mexico. The cartels in Mexico make them into pills and capsules, and fentanyl is very cheap to make, and then they smuggle them, and it enters into the human trafficking issue also. We've had human trafficking legislation this year in the legislature. But I was Googling, and I wondered, how much profit are these cartels making out of fentanyl? And it turns out, if you take a few thousand dollars worth of the ingredients and you press them into pills and smuggle them across the border, it becomes millions and millions and millions of dollars. And so there's this financial incentive. And I heard on the GOP debate the other night, some of them were saying, the cartels need to be treated as terrorist groups and go down there with our special ops and so forth. I think I'm leaning that way, because when you see 100,000 Americans a year dying from fentanyl poisoning, people that take, let's say, a Percocet or something that they think is just a pill for pain or maybe for recreational use, and they take it but it has fentanyl in there, and they die, That's not just overdosing, that's poisoning, I think. And we did do some legislation this year with fentanyl. We legalized fentanyl test strips because there was some talk about, well, fentanyl test strips are used by drug dealers and distributors, but maybe they are. But some of these people that are taking medication, they need to test and see if it's going to kill them if they take that. And so we took the stance that we need to go ahead and do that and also provide Narcan, which is an antidote for fentanyl poisoning, because like you said, some police officers that were searching a car, there's some fentanyl powder in there, they get it on their skin, they'll fall over and they will die unless they have an antidote, just fentanyl on the skin.
So I've struggled to understand drugs in general, so I've always kind of, this has not made sense to me, but correct me if I'm wrong, so these cartels and that sort of thing, they're putting these in pill form, selling them to people as other drugs, and yes. Then it ends up killing them, the people who buy them?
Yes, most people that overdose on fentanyl, you know, even in, for instance, marijuana, there's a lot of marijuana production in Oklahoma. They lace the marijuana with fentanyl. They lace the, let's say someone thinks they're buying cocaine. Well, they cocaine's more expensive, so they use a small amount of fentanyl that's very, very cheap, and they use a little bit of cocaine, and they tell them it's cocaine. And the person gets high off of it because the fentanyl is very, very potent. And so it's kind of a mix in cocaine and heroin and methamphetamine. They mix it in there. So the person gets a high, but it's cheaper to manufacture.
Hmm. Okay, so it's not going to necessarily kill you every time, I guess.
No, it's not okay, like, okay. You know. But it's the amount that's needed to kill you is 10, like the size of 10 grains of salt, which means... You ever gone to, you know, Penny's or Egbert's or someplace and there's a little salt left on the table? Well, 10 of those little tiny grains of salt is the size of the amount of fentanyl that will be lethal. And so you can imagine these people that manufacture this stuff are not pharmacists. They're not biochemists. And so they're putting this stuff together and they could easily put more in there. It's cheap stuff. But it's a lethal dose. And so that is a crisis that we really need to face.
Sure. Well, that helps make a little more sense. Appreciate you breaking that down. And unfortunately, again, we're out of time here. Well, it always goes fast. But State Representative Ron Bryce, really appreciate you coming by here this morning.
It's my pleasure. Thank you.
All righty. And we got lots more coming up on the program, including our Ask the Expert segment coming up with folks from Skink Insurance. That's on the way. 66 degrees right now in Coffeyville.